And now, on the African American Athlete Sports Network, it's Express Yourself with host T. Ramone and Sko.
Express Yourself!
It's an hour packed with guests, opinions, sports news of the day, and off-the-field issues that impact play on it. And you, the listeners, will have an opportunity to express yourself on our call-in line as well. Now here's our Express Yourself hosts, veteran sports journalists Tim Turner and Roscoe Nance.
Good evening, everyone, and once again, welcome to Express Yourself with T. Ramone and Sko. I'm Tim Turner, along with co-host Roscoe Nance, and we're just excited to be here for another episode of the show. And Roscoe, how are you doing this?
Oh, T. Ramone, I am doing super duper. It's just another day in paradise. Things are happening in the sports world, and we're going to express ourselves about it. So let's do this.
All right, it's a really great time of the year. We got tomorrow wraps up the NFL exhibition season. The real games start a week from tomorrow night with the Super Bowl champs going up against the next year's Super Bowl champs, the Atlanta Falcons. And we have college football kicking off this Saturday. And baseball pennant races are going on pretty hot right now. And it's an exciting time here in the Big A relative to that with the Braves in first place in the East. So it's a really good time to be a sports fan. I know everybody's pretty much jazzed about it. What do you think, Arthur?
Not about the Braves. Braves, but we won't go there. But you know, the season has really gotten off to an interesting start with North Carolina A&T's big win last Saturday against Jacksonville State. So if that's a harbinger of the rest of the season, we're in for quite a football season, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited about it.
Right, we're gonna chop that up in a little bit. We just wanted to be part of the conversation tonight, and tonight we just hope to cover a lot of topics that you guys will like, and so we want you to be part of the show as well. So you can give us a call at 929-477-1209. Again, that's 929-477-1209. We'll just have a couple of topics we're going to run over here tonight. First, we're going to have as our guest up top, with this being the first full week of the season, we're going to have Ty Miller, Director of News and Sports for the Power News Radio Network, and we'll talk to him about the coming season for HBCUs, the rankings, the polls that they have there, and initially we're going to start talking off about A&T and their win over Jack State, the Ohio State situation, Urban Meyer, the punishment's been handed down. We're going to talk about that and its aftermath. We want to look at Alabama and the depth chart, where they have a game coming up Saturday night in Orlando against Louisville. And as of right now, Louisville's going to be preparing for two quarterbacks and not one, since Nick Saban hasn't announced a starter. So it looks like we're going to, you know, be really excited about what's going to be happening here coming up for the season. We look forward to Mr. Miller, giving us some insight on what's happening in HBCUs around because we got four. Different conferences, and everybody's got their preseason pick. And we've already had a couple of games where they've been showing the HBCUs are in really good shape in terms of where they are this season.
That's right. Prairie View had a strong showing against Rice. You know, Rice isn't, you know, a world beater, but still they're FBS, and they went down to the wire and won on the last second field goal. Took that to beat Prairie View. So Prairie View looks to be strong as well in the swag.
Yeah. That's a heartbreaking. That was a shout out to the rest of the SWAC West, where you normally are going to expect to see Grambling and Southern up there running the roost. But then again, you see where PV comes out the box with a really strong showing out there against Rice. And it really was their game to win. And it's kind of disappointing that they weren't able to pull off that upset. It seems like we get one HBCU upset a season. Last year, the season started off with Howard knocking off a UNLV out there.
Yeah, and that really set the table for Howard, for the rest of the season. And they are really thinking thinking big going into this season. And I was talking to quarterback Caleb Newton, and you know, he said that they want you know, want two rings, the MEAC ring and the championship ring, you know, national championship ring as well. So they're getting greedy. They're getting greedy, and now they also want the Celebration Bowl championship. So they want it all, and which is good, you know, to think like that, because too many times teams go into the season not thinking that way. You know, they look for winning the conference championship and nothing beyond that. But you know, it's good.
Well, it's always better to aim high than to just be settling for conference and mediocrity. It's really good to see that they're thinking that way. But we want to see what Ty Miller has to say about all things HBCU. And Ty is on the line right now. Ty, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. You guys hear me?
Yeah, Ty, good evening. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I can hear you guys. Can you guys hear me? Because I'm on a speakerphone. Is that okay?
Probably do better not to have on speakerphone.
All right, hold on a second. Let me just take it off then. Hold on a second. My headset is disconnected. You guys there?
Yeah, we're here.
Okay.
So, Ty,
yeah,
I saw your poll. Let's start with your preseason rankings and go through those.
Okay, well, first of all, I want to say this poll, Roscoe, as you know, has been around a long time. It's now called the Power News Radio Network poll. But before that, it was the Sheridan Broadcasting Network poll from 1974 until this year. And I worked for Sheridan Broadcasting from 1990. Now, Sheridan Broadcasting, prior to them taking that poll, it was done by Bill Nunn, the first of the Pittsburgh Courier from 1927. And then his son, Bill Nunn Jr., who worked for the Pittsburgh Steelers, took that poll over, and it ran up until 1974, and that's when Sheridan took it over. I started work with Sheridan in 19, and I've been doing the poll since then. And when Sheridan folded last year, I continued it with the Power News Radio Network poll. So that's what this poll is. It has lineage back to 1927. Just want to give you some insight on it.
Well, let me interject something before you start on the interview with Roscoe, but that Bill Nunn is a very familiar name to people outside of sports. Wouldn't you say I think the Bill Nunn, the actor, that is his father, correct?
Yeah, there were actually three Bill Nunns, and they, you know, but Bill Nunn, the first, was the one who was a writer for the Courier, and
right.
He did start the poll in 27. Then Bill Nunn Jr., who later became a scout for the Pittsburgh Steelers, that's Jr., and then Bill Nunn the third, who was Radio Raheem and Do the Right Thing and a number of other movies, and unfortunately, Bill Nunn Jr. passed away, Bill Nunn III
right.
rather, passed away a few years ago here in Pittsburgh. That's his dad. He's the grandson and the son of Bill Nunn the first and Bill Nunn the second.
Well, I think
okay.
what makes it so confusing, the third also went by Bill Nunn Jr. and not
yeah,
third.
That's what made it so confusing, because a lot of people didn't know about Bill Nunn the first, which was the old writer. Well, I want to say old writer, but the writer for the Pittsburgh Courier.
So let's get into your poll.
Well, you know, Roscoe, you know, as you and I have discussed on numerous occasions, a lot of polls reflect what happened last year, and this poll is no different. Of course, North Carolina A&T ended up last season as number one, and of course, what they did last week, they making a strong case for getting back there. But at number 10, we got North Carolina Central. Of course, they had a change in coaching, so that might have something to do with why they're ranked so low. Alcorn State, which has won the SWAC East for the past couple of years, past 4 years, they're number 9. Bowie State, a Division II team with strong quarterback, they're number 8. Alabama State's at number 7. The reason being is because Alabama State closed last year strong with Don Hill-Ely as their head coach. And yeah, there are a lot of expectations down there. And Don Hill-Ely got an extension and got the job permanently. And he had those young men playing well last season. So it's kind of like San Francisco with Jimmy Garoppolo in the NFL. A lot of momentum at the end of the year, so hopefully for the Hornet faithful, they can carry that over until this season. But at number 6 is Tuskegee, and that could go all down the drain this weekend when they two meet, when they meet down and when they meet. And if Tuskegee upsets Alabama State, I don't know if it'll upset Roscoe, but if they beat them, then, of course, people will start talking again about, okay, how come we can't beat Tuskegee? We should beat them.
It wouldn't be an upset. It would not be an upset.
Well, probably not. You know,
it would be
but I think Alabama
usual.
State's people think it would be.
it's business as usual.
Number five, Southern. Of course, they have to replace their quarterback, Austin Howard, as do a number of teams this year. I have North Carolina A&T at number four. And the reason being because I looked at their schedule, and they have some pretty tough road games. And, you know, everybody's high on Lamar Renard at quarterback, but there are a lot of times, you know, he does a great job, but I still think something about that offense at times, it's going to be a defensive-minded team that wins for them. So they're at number four, but they're going to get it early. Number three, you guys talked about Howard. Howard has a lot of momentum with Kevin Newton. The only thing I think about Howard is the fact that Howard has somewhat of a tough schedule because they're on the road at Bethune-Cookman late in the season, and some of their games are South Carolina State. You don't know what the Bulldogs have this year. That's a late game in the season, too. It might be Buddy Pugh's swan song. So, you know, they could be playing to win him one more. And you don't know what some other teams like Central have, and you don't know what, of course, Delaware State have, but we don't expect much from the Hornets. Bethune-Cookman, number two. I looked at the Bethune-Cookman schedule, kind of lines up for them. And Terry Sims, you know, they've gone 7-4 last season, as did a number of teams. And the thinking here is that this just could be their year. Before I get to number one, I want to caution you guys. We have thunderstorms here in the Pittsburgh area, so if I get cut off, that might be the reason why. Because with the heat wave and the thunderstorms rolling through right now, so that's what may cause me to get cut off. But at number one, even though they have to replace a quarterback, they have a lot of talent, and they have been stockpiling talent, and Roderick Fobbs done a great job since he took over at Grambling, and that's the pick, preseason pick to be number one this year. Of course, they lost in the Celebration Bowl last year to North Carolina A&T. That game could have gone either way, but right now that's our number one. There are some other teams bubbling under the top ten, like Miles College, Jackson State, and Jackson State, of course. There's some excitement down there because of Hal Mumme, the guy who had those air raid-type offenses similar to Archie Cooley. He's taken over the offense. Tennessee State always in the mix. Prairie View, which took Rice to the hit last week. Somehow you knew they were going to lose that game. I don't know what happened. I know late they lost that game late because in the second half they lost momentum on a couple of fumbles. And Virginia State with Reggie Barlow, who used to be at Alabama State, Reggie's gone 19-2 in his two seasons down there. So I don't be surprised if they crack the top 10 in the season earlier or later on in the season.
Well, Ty, I just want to make one quick comment. You were talking about Alabama State and the expectations. But, you know, the Tuskegee game, you know, all kidding aside and looking at it, that's really a big, big game for them because, you know, looking at their first the first month of their schedule, they have Tuskegee, Auburn, Kennesaw State, and Grambling.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
I mean,
what you're saying.
yeah, they could. I mean, their season could be done before it's even started. And then they have Alcorn the first game in October. So,
yeah, if they
come through that, you know, with only a couple of losses, they'll be in good shape.
Knowing Coach Hill Ely, if they can muster six wins, that's a win for him. And he's a good coach politician and can sell himself out of a paper bag. So I think the first order, first course, Roscoe, they have to beat Tuskegee. They have to beat Tuskegee.
Yeah.
They can go 1-5 out the chute, but that one win has to be against Tuskegee. And I think, you know, but of course, Tuskegee, you know, if they win against Alabama State, you know, it won't make or break their season, but they expect to beat Alabama State now. It's no longer an upset, like you said. They expect to beat Alabama State.
And really, I think that Alabama State fans expect Tuskegee to beat Alabama State, even though they hope and say differently. But I think in the back.
Yeah, I do, because they've seen what happened. You know, because a lot of people look at Tuskegee and they think that Tuskegee can get some guys in that other guys can't, but that's not necessarily the truth. It's just they have a good coach. Slater's a good coach down there. He just knows how to coach his talent.
Yep. So it's
and they turn the tables
to
down there.
And you're right about Coach Ely. He's good for that program. He's really good for that program, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, in terms of actually coaching the team and in the community and, you know, just his personality, you know, he's going to do well for Alabama State if they allow him to.
And I think you're right, Roscoe, because looking at what he did at Morgan State, of course, And, you know, Morgan State, you know, with Baltimore being as tough a city as it can be, and if you can handle a football team down there, it just ran its course. Alabama State, you know, in terms of a community, a smaller community, but he's a guy who can have a great impact not only on the field but also off the field more so.
Well, you know, just given his personality, you know, they have the television stations there. You know, he's good with the media, and, you know, he just meets people well. So he's going to bring a lot of exposure, you know, to that program. And in turn, that's going to help him, you know, with the recruiting. And, you know, he just does the little things that, you know, you need to do to sell your program and get it going. So, well, Ty, let me ask you about A&T and your take on their victory against Jacksonville State. How
you
big
know,
was that?
I actually was pleasantly surprised. To see Sam Washington take over the team from Rob Broadway, and in a sense, the defense, of course, he ran the defense for a number of years, A&T. They didn't miss a beat. The defense was on point. They kind of wavered a little bit late there, gave us some big plays. I was actually surprised that they won that game. I kept waiting for Jacksonville State to take that game over, and a lot of it because Jacksonville State, you know, they played Auburn last year, and they took Auburn to the final quarter. But it was just something about this year's Jacksonville State team. They just couldn't get over the hump, and I think it was more their quarterback play. He was a hit-or-miss guy. But I'm really happy for A&T that they got off to such a great start against a high-caliber opponent, so to speak. And I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, I didn't expect them to get blown out, but I expected Jacksonville State to play better. Not to say that they didn't play well, because North Carolina A&T had a lot to do with that. But I think North Carolina A&T, they can only get better because their offense really couldn't get on track. Lamar Renard never got on track. They had an injured wide receiver. And Markwell Cartwright, he never broke that big run. So if they can get some experienced guys, get a little bit more experience on offense going, they're going to be another tough out this year, even though they got a tough game this week against East Carolina.
Well, along those lines, you're talking about these early season games, and you're about to mention East Carolina, but I looked at your top 10 and who they have to deal with this and early in the season. You got Alcorn is at Georgia Tech, you know, and then you have Howard at Ohio. Bethune's playing Tennessee State. I think Bethune also has Miami coming up, and then you got Grambling against Louisiana Lafayette. And how much of these early season games how much stake do you put into them in terms of determining how well a team's going to play or how bad they're going to play? Because a lot of times these guys go into the conference schedule with losing records.
Well, unfortunately, you know, for black college teams, there's an asterisk that should be – I mean, really a black college poll can come out maybe late September, early October, because when they're playing those so-called money games, you really don't expect them to win. I mean, like Howard beating UNLV last year, that was a rarity, so to speak. It's becoming more common now a little bit, but it doesn't happen that often. So from a black college football poll standpoint and black college record standpoint, you don't put much stock into that early season games because you don't expect a South Carolina State to be the South Carolina. You don't expect an Alcorn State to be the Georgia Tech. And it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And so if people truly know what's happening with these black college teams in terms of who they play early on the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season, you really can discount that because that doesn't really factor into the final months of the season when they played each other, when they get into their conference schedule. And what happens really early on, if a team can come out of September, those first 2 or 3 games against those upper echelon colleges unscathed in terms of injuries, that's when you can really tell what they may have, because a big question that we always ask coaches after they play at Georgia Tech or a South Carolina or even an Ohio, we ask them, how's your team? How are they injury-wise? Did you sustain any big injuries? Because sometimes those guys get beat up. You know, those are like
sacrificial land games. Well, that's what I was getting at. I know with Georgia, Southern played up here at Georgia, and a kid got injured on the kickoff, and he's just now learning how to walk again after like 2 or 3 years. And, you know, those are the things you have to deal with on the off chance that, you know, you're going to have guys going to get against guys that are maybe outweighing by 200 pounds, and they have waves of people that they got coming at you, and you have to play your best throughout. So, you know, do you have to weigh the financial consideration against saying they're playing
for experience
versus
money? Yeah, I mean, the guy you're speaking about is Vaughn Scales, and fortunately the people at Georgia have done a great job with him and his family in terms of making sure they were taken care of. But, you know, it pales in comparison And I, you know, to just what he has to go through. And Roscoe, I know you remember this, the name Kent Waldrop back in 1972 when
Alabama
played Texas Christian.
Alabama. Right.
And Kent Waldrop got injured on a kickoff return. And Bear Bryant, the late Alabama coach, you know, he really took that to heart. And they did everything they could in for the rest of Kent Waldrop's life until he passed away for him. But you're right. When these money games happen, you do – it's a war of attrition because the players are outweighed, they're outnumbered. And, you know, North Dakota State, for example, last year beat Mississippi Valley last year 72-7, something like that. And they're going back out there again this year. So those things happen. And for the black college coaches, they just want to – and teams, they just want to try to get through there without a bunch of injuries. And, of course, they need the money, although it's not what it should be, but they need the money for their athletic budgets.
Well, I think, you know, coaches go into that game and athletes go into those games, you know, you still play the game to win. But they also know when to say when and when it's time to wave the flag, you know, and get their frontline, you know, players out of there, you know, when they see
right.
the game is out of hand, you know, there's no point. It's no point. You know, you just let it go.
Would you like to see those games go away, though, Roscoe? That's been a big debate the past couple of years.
Well, I would. I mean, I understand, you know, the finances involved, but, I mean, it's not competition. I mean, it's really what it is. It's a practice game for, you know, the home team, and they get credit for
right.
a victory. And, you know, and it's just not competition. And it doesn't do anything to help the perception of black college football, you know, that you can beat 72-0 or 65-0 or whatever. It doesn't do anything to help that image. And,
right,
you know,
right.
And a lot of it is about, you know, perception. If you're a kid sitting at home watching this game on TV, you know.
It's not just black colleges, too, because I know I see online today I saw a clip from Tim Brando who just crushed Alabama for their non-conference schedule playing, you know, Arkansas State and the Citadel and Louisiana Lafayette, those type of things. You know, it's not just them, but, you know, since we're talking about HBCUs, people use these games to pad their schedule, and they look better than what they really are.
But and you're correct in that, but the perception of Arkansas State losing to Alabama is not the same as Arkansas Pine Bluff losing to Alabama. You know, people don't
right.
look at it in the same light. You know,
right,
they
right.
just don't.
What happens there, like Roscoe, you're saying is though nobody looks at those games like that. Even though, like a coach like Nick Saban, he's been pushing for a 9-game SEC schedule. Now, why the SEC doesn't want to do that, I don't know. I mean, so people criticize Nick Saban for playing those games, but he's been trying to push for it because. One thing and I don't want to get off track talking about black colleges, but one thing you notice about Alabama, they will play the kickoff classic. They will play the tough game. They'll play the tough early season game every year. Some schools won't do that. You know, of course, they'll come back the following 2 weeks with a cream puff game, but they'll play the opening game where, you know, it could hurt their schedule. One team that has – I don't know if you mentioned this, Roscoe, UNT, have you mentioned the fact about Hampton moving on from black colleges? Because as I go through everything now, that's a big loss in a sense for black college football. But Hampton moves on because they feel they can win at a higher level.
Well, too, I saw a plethora of reasons for them wanting to do that. They're saying that it also is a financial thing because most of the games are within reasonable driving distance as opposed to – going from Virginia down to Tallahassee or Daytona Beach or Savannah when this is Savannah State last year in the MEAC, where they're thinking this is for financial they make it seem like it's a better fit for them all the way around.
But is it a higher level? And two, you have to weigh the competition and the fans and their interest. I mean, will the fans want to see them play?
They'll play Wofford.
Wofford or whoever.
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed
what
to playing Norfolk
South
State
schools,
or playing Florida A&M or playing South Carolina State or A&T. So, you know,
I think they're going to take a hit this year in their fans. I think they're going to take a hit with some of those games, you know.
I think they're going to take a hit for a lot of years.
For the long term. What about Tennessee State? I don't think anybody's developed any relationship with any schools in OVC, and they've been in there for, what, a decade or so?
Yeah, right.
And nobody's going to see them play Austin Peay or those type of games.
And if you look at Howard's schedule this year, they play people like St. Andrews, they play Virginia Lynchburg, they play Lane College. So it's really – this is an independent-type schedule this year, so it's really an interesting
– Those aren't even Division I programs.
Yeah, I know. That's what, you know, Hampton football to me took a step back. You know, they're going to have to take a step back before they go forward.
Yeah.
I thought it was
interesting. And from what I understand from talking to just people who talk about Tennessee State, the attendance has been down at their football games since they've joined the OVC.
Well, yeah, Tennessee State's highest attended games when they play those black college teams. You know, for them.
And it would be down because – when you think about it, you know, the Eastern Illinois, the Austin Peay, they aren't going to bring fans to Nashville. Whereas, you know, Jackson State is in a different category because they play in Memphis every year. But, you know, they bring fans. If they were to play Southern, Southern's fan would go to Nashville. And the other HBCU would bring fans to Nashville. But Tennessee State plays conference games at home, they aren't getting an appreciable crowd from the visitor side. And then, you know, combine that with playing at the Titans Stadium at Vanderbilt, you know, it's not a good look, you know, in a virtually empty stadium.
Right.
Right. It's sort of like those Thursday night ESPN games, because what happens with those games, the MEAC, they get some money, but in a sense they lose at the gate for weekends, because a lot of people have, over the years, you know, thought about attending black college games on the weekend. But if they happen on Thursday, it definitely kills the gate.
True. That is so true. But, you know, and it's interesting because even – you know, the weekend games, Saturday games, for a lot of years, the HBCUs were resistant to having those games televised live. I know when, and even they were resistant to BET in the old days, even doing the replay, because they felt that it would hurt the gate. So it just underscores really where black college football is in terms of fan interest. It's not at a point where a large percentage of black college football fans are going to go to the game just because their team is playing, regardless of who they're playing, the way that it is,
right,
you know, at the major universities that, you know, get, you know, 80, 90,000 for their spring football game.
If I have any criticism of...
You have a ton of classics going on, too, where you have, like, Tennessee State, I think, plays two games on campus this year. I think their stadium's being renovated, but you have teams that play maybe 2-3 home games a season because they're going all over the place, playing in Mobile at the Classic, going to Chicago, that kind of place, Circle City, those type of things. That has impacted as well.
Well, you know, Tuskegee is a classic example of that. We only have 3 home games. We're not going all over the place, but we play in... Phoenix City, we play in Columbus, Georgia, and then we're playing in Montgomery. So that's 3 games every year that are not going to be home games.
What I think TV hasn't done that's been kind of fair to black college football, Roscoe, is like you and I have been covering this sport for a long time. And you know, if anyone were looking to put together a schedule where you know you would get a bona fide gate, at least for the first half, and you know it would be attractive on TV no matter how small the venue, some of these games they put on just don't match up to that. Because, there, you know, there are some games, in a lot of cases there are some classics, but there are some other games, like, for example, a Miles College-Tuskegee game. It's always going to be well-attended, you know, no matter what happens.
Right.
It's going to be well-attended. A Virginia State-Norfolk State game is going to be well-attended. So if they would just concentrate on showcasing those games and you can see the color and pageantry and the play at those games, and you can see a good crowd, then black college football would probably look a little bit different, as opposed to seeing those watching a Tennessee Titans stadium game where there's it seems like 20 fans in the stadium. Because
how much input do the different conferences have in terms of helping make out the schedule. They have these contracts for 7 years. They look down and say, okay, we have Alabama State playing Tuskegee. That's a great one we want to show. We have Tennessee State, you know, we have FAMU playing Howard. That's the one we want, somebody wants to see. How much input
right.
do you have in doing that?
I know that's a question or an answer for Dennis Thomas, the commissioner of the MEAC, because he supposedly has a lot of input into what happens with ESPN, because they do champion ESPN. They've been doing it for a number of years. Although, in my estimation, I think ESPN to some degree falls short in terms of what they do with black college football, because what I don't like seeing is, and it's no criticism of them because they do show something, but when they never talk about the black college teams. The announcer's always talking about, like, I mean, we kind of skirted the issue about Alabama and the other teams here a little bit, but they spend the focus of the games a lot of times talking about those other colleges, and when they go to halftime, there's no report about black colleges. It's only about what's coming up for Alabama, what's coming up for Auburn, what's coming up for Ohio State. They never, during a black college game, is never just the focus of what the viewer is seeing. It's never
the
focus.
Well, let's face it and be honest about it. That's not their focus. What they're doing is promoting their games on the weekend. And they're throwing HBCUs a bone by showing their games. But they're not. I mean, how many times during the week do you see the HBCU game promoted?
Never. You might see
time you see it will be the first time, but they never talk about, you know, this is a big game coming up this week, and, you know, A&T and Central, you know, the MEAC title is on the line, that kind of thing. You know, they never do it. And so, consequently, the masses of black college football fans aren't aware of what's going on, you know, in black college football.
Well, that's true. They make the mistake of always trying to tout the Celebration Bowl as the Black College National Championship when they can.
Right.
Well,
it makes me long for the day when ESPN was just starting out. They used to have a Black College Report on weekends.
Yeah, they did.
People would gravitate toward that. So, I mean, it's like that's totally lost, and that's what's missing, especially when they're talking about doing these games.
True. But, again, that's not their interest. I mean, back then they needed that, you know, to build their numbers. Now they got their numbers up, they don't need it anymore. So, you know, they feel, I guess, an attack of whatever conscience or guilt or whatever to throw a bone.
But I would like to think that sometimes the announcers on those games were leaning a little bit heavily towards talking about the black colleges as opposed to, you know, let me give you my top five, and I'm not trying to criticize anyone in particular, but they would try to lean a little bit heavily on what's really going on in black college football in terms of their conversation, but it never comes up.
Yeah.
You know, and,
yeah.
It never comes up.
And I would think that's just company policy.
Probably. That we're not going to talk about anything else.
Yeah. They have a script to follow.
But they could really, even mentioning some of those other colleges would be good publicity for them. And when people, you know, one thing I want, Roscoe knows this, but one thing that we've always done is shared, and even with the power poll, we've always ranked the colleges together. You know, I've never saw any need to separate Division II from the so-called 1AA schools or the FCS schools because there's really not that much difference when it comes down to black colleges. And you can look no further than Tuskegee, Alabama State, Alabama A&M. And when they mix it up sometimes, you know, oftentimes Tuskegee comes out on top. So to say those schools are not worthy of consideration in terms of a poll, you know, it's just not fair. So, you know, I like to see them on an even playing field. And what they really should look at doing, ESPN, they really should look at doing a weekend where you have the CIAA teams and the SIAC teams also in the mix in terms of playing for a championship. But they've never done that.
Yeah. Well, you know, really, a lot of the FCS schools should be Division II, you know, based on their budget and all and their facilities. They really should be Division II. I mean,
you only have a handful of schools being up there being the FCS then, because you know, the money's not there for everybody.
So be it. I mean, you know, not to pick on Mississippi Valley, but to pick on Mississippi Valley, I mean, come on.
Right.
I mean, you see what's happening with Savannah State.
Right, they're moving back down again.
Right. You see what happened with Winston-Salem.
Right.
Well,
and then you got Cheney disappeared.
Black college football could be an entity unto itself if all those presidents got together and said, let's make this thing happen where black college football is its own entity. Because right now they've already said at the MEAC and SWAC, okay, we don't want to go to the FCS playoffs because we always get beat. I remember James Carson, the old Jackson State coach years ago in the 1990s, I remember him telling me that, you know, Ty, we go to Western Illinois, we get killed. It's, you know, we kill, so we'd rather just not go to the playoffs. And they've been saying that for a long time. Well, you know, why not make it all inclusive for the SIAC and the CIAA as well? And make, because they can make this thing happen, but they got to come together on it. Because the SWAC and MEAC playing for a so-called mythical championship is not really what black college football is or should be about.
Yeah, you're so right, Ty. You make good points. And, you know, we really appreciate you calling in and, you know, eagerly awaiting the next week's poll to see how it shakes out. And I'll get my vote in early. I won't vote often, but I will vote early.
Okay. Hey, also, Black College Football Weekly show I've been doing since 1990. It kicks off tomorrow. It's a 30-minute show on Black College Football, and we've been doing it for 28 years. And I'm not sure what stations in your area might carry it, but we do have that. You know, so if anyone wants to contact Roscoe and know how to get in contact with me, if any station wants to carry it, we actually offer that up free of charge.
Okay, we'll do. Now I'll be looking for that.
Okay. Hey, thanks
as always, my friend. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, Roscoe, appreciate you for everything that you've done for me this summer in more ways than one. And T. Ramon, it's nice talking to you as well.
Yes, sir.
All right, take care.
All right. Now, that's a strong opinion for what's going on in HBCUs, and we thank Ty for being on here with us. I thought it was really interesting to talk about just that last point, where is it the cachet of being an NCAA? Do you have to play football in NCAA football to be able to be eligible for the other sports? Because I would love to see that, where you would just have it wide open and you'd have the conference champions from those four major conferences, maybe throw in an independent like TSU and then have them battle it out for the championship.
Well, I think you can stay in the NCAA and still do that. Because, you know, you look at MEAC and SWAC.
Notre Dame.
You look at MEAC and SWAC. They're in the NCAA, but they don't participate in the playoffs.
True.
So, I mean, what's to stop, you know,
I think that would be great, but I look at them talking about that it's not that much difference between the D2 schools and the black FCS schools, and I think a Grambling would motorboat a Kentucky State or something like that.
Well,
you know, those type of things.
It's the same in FBS, the upper echelon schools. There's a wide gap between the upper echelon schools and the bottom feeders, the lower echelon, the lower rung. And it's the same way in black college football. You know, you have the Gramblins, the A&Ts, you know, the schools like that. Then, you know, you have the Savannah States. You have, you know, the Texas Southerns, you know, people like that that, you know, just can't get it right. And, I mean, that's just, you're always going to have the haves and the have-nots. So,
well, yeah, that's true. But I just thought it was an interesting take on that. But I just wanted to also stop here for a second and say, if you guys if want to join the conversation, give us a call at 929-477-1209, excuse me. That's 929-477-1209. I just wanted to get up there and just give a shout-out to Ty for that. But we want to move on to other college football news where you see with Urban Meyer has now been suspended for the first three games of the season at Ohio State following the situation with his assistant coach and the knowing or not knowing about the domestic violence incidents that he'd had over the years. And just what do you think of that, Roscoe?
That's an interesting situation because you had the incident a few years ago with the players and the tattoos, and Jim Tressel was involved in that, and Tressel lost his job. And you have this incident. You have this incident, you know, with domestic violence. You know, a woman being abused and whatever, and you know, it's a three-game suspension. You know. Somewhere, somehow, that doesn't seem to balance out.
Me it doesn't either, because I'm looking at Todd Gurley was selling memorabilia. He got four games his senior year at Georgia. You know.
Well, Todd Gurley ain't Urban Meyer, you know, if you understand what I'm saying.
Well, that's very much obvious.
You know, and it's just shows the inequity, and it's there. Nobody wants to acknowledge it, but it's there. And to be honest, I'm surprised he got three games. To be very, very honest,
I figured that he would get those three games because they really are. I mean, they have Oregon State this weekend, then they have their first Big Ten game, and they play a nobody in Rutgers. And then they go out to Fort Worth to play TCU. And it wouldn't have hurt them to do four because their fourth game is Tulane before they get into the meat of their schedule. But they start off with being at Penn State. So he'll have one game that coaches a warm-up, against Tulane, and then they start the Big Ten schedule, the real Big Ten schedule, when they go to Happy Valley.
But actually he's able to coach the team starting Monday.
Through the week. Yeah, he can coach through the week, but in terms of
starting Monday, he can coach the team during the week, but not during the game.
Right.
So
you know these practices that he has been having, you're quite sure that the acting head coach has been taking practice instructions from him. So
We know this, but you know,
just like when a manager in baseball gets ejected, he's in his office, but he's still calling the shots.
Right. You know, in this era of cell phones and all of this, you know, anything.
Yeah, they're fooling nobody. Well, let's move on to another topic here where another opener this year, the team that AP has picked to be number one this year, Alabama, they play in Orlando against Louisville, and the depth chart was released this week, and it's a two-headed monster. They're going to have Jalen Hurt, the starter from last year, and his backup for most of the year, Tua Tagovailoa. He's also going to be – they're both as tandem quarterbacks. And my take on it is that Alabama just wants to give Louisville twice the work on defense to prepare, as opposed to not really knowing, because I'm sure the folks in Alabama know who's going to be number one come Saturday night.
Well, I've said all along, Jalen Hurts will be the starter. And this code number one and all this stuff, I mean, that sounds cute and all, but how many quarterbacks do you play at the same time? You only play one quarterback, right?
You don't have one on the field.
Whoever goes on the field for the first series, that's the starter. And in my estimation, that was going to be Jalen Hurts because, I mean, you can't discount his record. What, 26-2?
And right, 26-2, and a national championship.
It should have been 27-1 because he actually won that game against Clemson in the national championship, but the defense let it get away. But remember, he took them down the field and scored to put them ahead.
Right. Right.
And the defense. Yeah. Okay, he didn't have a great game in the championship game, but still, he got credit for that win because he was a starting quarterback. So he's still 26-2. But the reason I say that he's going to be the starter is because, you know, Nick Saban, you know, he's a conservative coach. And the thing, you know, he doesn't like turnovers. And Tua is going to turn the ball over because he throws it. He has confidence in his arm, and he's going to make – he's going to try to squeeze it into places where he can't get it because he thinks, like all strong-arm quarterbacks, that he can throw it through a keyhole. And the results are sometimes he gets it through the keyhole, and sometimes he doesn't. And I think a lot is going to depend on Alabama's defense. If Alabama's defense is lights out like it was a few years ago, where they were before they scored for 11 touchdowns themselves and all of that kind of thing,
right,
then he can afford to play fast and loose with Tua. But if the defense is kind of shaky, he's going to be more conservative and go with Jalen Hurts because Hurts is not going to turn the ball over. He's not going to take chances. So
the defense took a lot of hits this year in the draft. And what you're saying, you're right about the conservativeness of a Saban. And I tried to make Tiger Valoa look like the second coming because of what he did the second half. But he made some mistakes in that game.
Yeah, he made
he
some mistakes.
He did try to do what you're saying. He did try to force the ball in there a couple of times. And he easily could have lost it had it not been for Georgia just having a horrible defensive backfield. And it got exposed in the second half.
Yeah, he made some plays that should have lost him the game.
Right, right.
Yeah. He made him some plays.
And
you know, that said, we'll see how it shakes out. But, you know, I'm often wrong, but never in doubt. Jalen Hurts, he's the man.
He's the man for right now. You got a top 10 schedule this weekend coming up. You got, you know, Clemson's playing at home against Furman. Georgia has a open against Austin Peay. They're going to see what the Bulldogs are made of because it seems like a lot of people this week are picking the Dogs and not Alabama to win the SEC this year, which is really an interesting take on that since Alabama's ranked number one, but a lot of folks are picking Georgia to knock them off to win the conference championship.
Well, it's a long way into December. A lot of things are going to happen. It's a long, long way.
It's going to be interesting to see that Wisconsin is playing Western Kentucky. Ohio State, we talked about that, but Oregon State without Urban Meyer. Washington and Auburn play here in Atlanta on Saturday, and that's going to be a test for Auburn because people are giving Auburn a lot of love this year.
Yeah. That's going to be an interesting game, I think. I really do.
Is Washington, I guess they're with the class of the Pac-12 there. Oklahoma has a game against Florida Atlantic, number eight Miami. They're playing LSU in Arlington. It's one of those Jerry World games, and so that's something I guess we could all look forward to. With a lot of these early season games, these guys are playing fairly tough competition just to ward off the talk of them having soft schedules.
Yeah. Well, you know, that LSU-Miami game, I like that game. I want to see that game.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, Miami is – so they're on the come. They're bouncing back to not to what they used to be, but they're improving and they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. And LSU always has talent. They always have talent.
Yeah, they do. Except under center, because it seems like they lost like two or three quarterback transfers this year already. So that's going to be kind of tight for them to see who lines up under center, because that has been their weakness over the past couple of years. They've had outstanding skill players except for quarterback.
And it's funny how that happens. It's almost like, you know, well, I don't want a great quarterback, you know, because,
right.
You know, I mean, and Louisiana is one of those states that's just teeming, you know, with football talent. And you look at the quarterbacks who've come out of Louisiana over the years. You know, Doug Williams, Shaq Harris, Burt Jones, Terry Bradshaw, Joe Ferguson. I mean, come on.
Yeah, they have that. But at the same time, you look at but overall the talent on the squad itself. NFL drafts are loaded with LSU players. I think Alabama and LSU typically lead the way in players drafted. You know, with Georgia maybe being in the mix too. So, I mean, for them not to be competitive every year, granted, Alabama's in the way on the west side because the west is probably the most competitive half of the SEC with the teams that they have over
there. Without a doubt.
So it's hard for them to run that gauntlet. They have to play Alabama. They got A&M when they're good. They got Arkansas that's good on occasion. Mississippi State, Ole Miss jump up every so often to bite you. And then you got Auburn. So they got, I mean, every week it seems like they got to do something, as opposed to the East, where, you know, Georgia has free reign, except for this year. South Carolina may be really good. Florida may be on the comeback trail this year. Tennessee, we'll see what they're going to do this year with their new head coach.
Well, you know, you're talking about the SEC West. What about Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M? You know, all of those strong teams that you were talking about, he has to play all of them.
Well, you know, he just needs to be frugal with his money, although he's a multimillionaire over there. But they have all the amenities. A&M has everything you would need to have a championship team and to be in a state like Texas, which is fertile for talent. I mean, because it's a huge place, and high school football is a big thing there, and they take it seriously. And they should be back at the level when they had Jackie Sherrill running the show. Back then, that's what they should be aspirationally going for. We only got about 9 minutes left in the show, and I wanted to roll past another topic we could hit real quick. In the NFL, it looks like the new helmet rule has taken its toll in another way, where Jacksonville lost a player. Their leading receiver from last year, Marquise Lee, planted his foot. The Falcon defensive back, Casey, went into him low while he had his foot planted, and he blew out Lee's knee. And that's just because guys don't want to hit anybody high, and they don't want to hit anybody with the helmet. And this is what has come about. So it's an unintended consequence, perhaps, because I thought this would happen several years ago when they first went in this targeting rule, that there were going to be a spate of lower body injuries as opposed to people getting concussions, which has been, you know, CTE and concussions have been all the talk.
Well, you know, CTE and that kind of thing, you know, that's way down the road, so players aren't concerned about that. But blowing out a knee is right now, and that could end your career on the spot.
Well, you're right. Players don't care about that. The NFL
That's what I'm saying. Because some players, I can't remember who it was, said that he would pay a guy's fine. You know, if he hit him in the head, as opposed to going for his knees, so he would pay his fine because he didn't want to risk ending his career. So
right.
I don't know, but it there are a lot of unintended consequences of that rule, which, you know, and I suppose that it is needed, because, you know, you see so many athletes, you know, football players, you know, after their careers, who are having so many problems and who are committing suicide and the like. That I guess it's almost like, you know, the league is trying to protect them from themselves in the long run.
Well, I think they protected themselves from litigation, because you look at the professional football players. I think something I read a while ago, the average lifespan of these guys is like 67, something like that, which is alarming to think that's it, because of, you know, it's not just head injuries and that kind of thing. It's knee injuries. It's back injuries. It's the weight loss and the up and down weight loss and that kind of stuff, and the building and dropping muscles. It's a plethora of things that go on with these guys. But now that you're talking about hitting somebody, with, like I said, the defensive back, Jalen Ramsey, his Lee's teammate said, "Hey, you can't be mad at Casey," he said, "because you have to be mad at the NFL and it's how that rule is. It's just, people are scared to tackle normal because they guess they don't want to do the helmet to helmet and get flagged." And, you know, that's what he was saying. You can't blame 27, which is KG's number. So when you got guys on your own, you know, on the opposite team seeing that and going, hey, it happened because of the rule, you can't really be mad. You can only be upset that it happened.
Yeah, well, that's true. And another unintended consequence of it is going to be poorer tackling. You know, you're going to see more and more missed tackles, I believe, because guys will be indecisive as to how they should make the tackle. And as a former football player yourself, you know that the last thing that you want to do is think.
Right.
You know,
you want to react.
You want to react and play instinctively. But if you know you're sitting there thinking, "Oh, what should I do?" The play is gone, and
so too may be
your job.
True, and with the coach's job, and a lot of folks will probably lose their job to have something like this. But I'm looking at it from a perspective of a person who watches the Falcons every week, and I see the running back, the Devonta Freeman, and what he does. The guy goes, he runs hard, and he leans, he takes his helmet and goes, his helmet lowers his head into the defender. That's out now. You can't do that. So
well,
what are you
going
to do with guys who try to run over folks?
Well, all the great power running backs, that's how they ran. You know, they punished Walter Payton. You know, he was a violent runner. You know, he punished tacklers. So,
right.
You know, and the other thing is that's how athletes learn to play the game. You know, from early stages. So, and now they're trying to unlearn and learn a new way.
Right. It seems like overnight that they're trying to tell them how you used to do it for the past 20 years of your life. Okay, tomorrow you got to do it different. You got to do it this way.
And if you don't do it this way, it's going to cost you.
Right. It's going to cost you in the pocket. It could cost you an injury to you, cost an injury to somebody else. You're going to be so worried about not putting your head on somebody, you're going to miss the tackle. Which is, you know, it may open up offenses. Who knows?
Well, if that did happen, the league wouldn't be upset about that because, you know, that's what the league has become now, you know, a video game on turf.
Well, you know, we're talking about player safety here, and you see where Jerry Jones with a straight face advocates an 18-game schedule because the people have been getting hurt in these preseason games. They want to do one or two less preseason games, add two games to the schedule, you know. It's for the player's safety that they want to add two games. You know, I don't think he's thinking about, you know, two more games of revenue for his team, but that would be very, very, you know, callous to think that's what his mindset would be.
Well, we are talking about Jerry Jones, you know.
True.
And it's about the bottom line. Let's face it. Because, you know, with the money they make off of the preseason games, they can take care of their expenses for the season. You know, everything they make on during the regular season is, you know, just a bonus. And even if you add two regular season games, then that's more TV money as well.
Right.
Because the games are going to be televised. You know, preseason games, those are local broadcasts. That's not national. So,
right.
You know.
Well, that's just the NFL is sticking fit. Tomorrow is the end of the exhibition season. The next week is going to start the NFL season. And next week on Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Scope, we're going to have D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution here to talk about the NFL season. He'll be talking to us from Philadelphia, where the Falcons will be playing the Eagles in the season opener, last year's champs. So we're going to be looking forward to seeing that as well as the season is ready to kick off. There are a lot of changes this year, a lot of personnel changes. There should be a lot of excitement across the league. Hope springs eternal for about like 20 teams. And the other 10, y'all know what's up. there are teams that have no hope of winning. But about 20 teams have a really good shot of making it a really special year, and you're going to have some of the usual suspects, and you're going to have a team like Jacksonville jump up and be excited, because one of the places I look at is I'm looking at Kansas City as being a really strong team this year out there in the AFC West, and I think they're going to make some noise, and it's just a feeling I have about a Pat Mahomes out there and what he's going to do. So We'll discuss that next week with D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He's a beat writer for the Falcons, and we'll just talk about the NFL season as it gets going.
Good enough.
All right.
Looking forward
well,
to
folks,
it.
As we do every week, have it going on for next week. We look forward to chopping up football and whatever the news of the day is after the first week of college football, and we're excited to see what's happening. So for my co-host Roscoe Nance, this is Tim Turner, and we're gone. We'll see you next week.